And it is time to bring in David Tarachuk, and it's time for the Media Beat. Of course, David joins us weekly on Fridays at this time. He is, of course, the host of his own website, themediabeat.us. He's a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. And you can catch David here live and also on our, of course, on-demand page, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we say bonjour, Mr. Tarachuk.
Bon après-midi from me. I'm in France. It's one of those weeks where if you're a journalist, you'd really want to be in the nation's capital, the United States nation's capital. But I'm about 4,000 miles away. But watching it with great interest and seeing how the French are reporting it too. It's been a fascinating week. And as I'm sure it's been even more fascinating if you've been closer to it.
It's been fascinating, but in the terms of this presidency, nothing lights the fire anymore because there's just so many bizarre things that happen. But I am interested in what people in France think about it. To me, David, as an individual, when the op-ed broke in the New York Times, the thing that concerned me the most, and I talked about this with Jill a little bit, was the coup from within. To me, to have and believe you me, anybody who knows me, I'm not a supporter of Donald Trump, but to have a combination of people within the top ranks of the administration talking about administration change and not doing it publicly and not going to the Congress and giving their reasons is a form of a coup d'etat, and that scares the hell out of me.
Well, it's being regarded in France as, just more of the same in some ways, but they've taken it in stride, as you might say. France 4, 24, the French 24, 24 hours of news a day, has been... as I say, taking it on stride, putting it less of a priority this week than the Nike ads featuring Colin Kaepernick, and on a par with the U.S. Senate committee's grilling of the Supreme Court nominee Judge Kavanaugh, of course. On the other hand, they were echoing a lot of the American media's usage. I noticed the French word explosif. Which I guess was an echo of the Americans headlining the whole story of the insider, the senior, I get the terminology correct, the senior administration official who wrote the anonymous op-ed article in the New York Times. There in America, it was being called a bombshell by many media outlets. You probably wouldn't call it a bombshell. You think it's more of the same. And in some ways it is. I mean, it followed hard upon, didn't it? It followed hard upon Bob Woodward's, the notable, I think, is a kind, the least I can say about Bob Woodward as a reporter. He's a kind of legendary reporter, along with Carl Bernstein from the Washington Post. They both worked for the Washington Post when they became famous for helping to topple Richard Nixon by their investigative journalism. And now Bob is still with the Washington Post and still doing exposés about administrations. And his new book, the main title is a terrific title, Fear, about the nature of the Trump administration. It's revelations shortly preceding this autobiographical, if you like, contribution from inside the White House. Altogether, I think, amounts to, if not a bombshell, something pretty dramatic in terms of its likely impact. It's certainly being treated that way by serious commentators here in France as well as in the States.
I think what makes it really something of serious impact is you do have a book that comes out by a respected journalist who does have tapes, who does have notes. His book is going to be backed up like all of his work has always been. So what made... what happened the
we
day
can
after.
Safely assume that, yeah. Yes.
Well,
he's not going to show us his notes, but yeah.
But having a journalist who is respected, and then the day after, it makes the commentary the day after significant, even though it was an unknown comment.
Well, also the New York Times had it before.
Yeah.
So they held it for 3 days.
Yeah.
So, But what I'm really curious about, this is just my sick mind, and Marshall heard it before and he just rolled his eyes, is, gee, I really wish the Washington Post had run it.
Well, it's very interesting. It's very interesting that if you are the official inside the New York Times now, is this person is being constantly referred to as the writer, but we can call him
the senior
the senior administration official, and I'm happy just to go with official for the next 20 minutes or less. We can talk about the official, I think, and maybe even use that new shorthand for when you never want to assign an agenda. We'll put it in the plural, shall we? We'll talk about them, the official. Except that you end up with awkward constructions like this anonymous staff member. We don't know who they is.
Right. It
was an interesting question, though, which you pose is why did he, she, they? Why did the official go to the New York Times, of all things? It's as the New York Times itself is a little puzzled by that. Jim Dow, the editor of the op-ed section, opposite editorial, which means, you know, all these solicited articles from outside that go on the facing page across the other side of the paper from the editorial, the paper's own editorial. This op-ed article was offered to the paper that, of course, the Trump administration is berated. And why would it go there and not to, you might mention the Washington Post. I would think more immediately of the Wall Street Journal, whose opinion section is, you know, much more associated with the Trump administration, and would be a much more natural place for this to be.
Right. That's interesting. Because I have a beady little mind, I didn't even think about the Wall Street Journal. But that's a very good point, because that is the more likely, if that is the more likely place for something like this, to shall we say, speak to or Bloomberg, to speak to people who might...
Well, he wanted. It's clear that the official wanted an outlet with a big voice, as Jim Dow's own phrase for it. Jim Dow, the editor of the Times. But the interesting thing about Jim Dow's very diligent efforts to check out that he wasn't being taken for a ride here, and that the person was really who the person was claiming to be, a senior Trump administration official. One question he didn't ask was, why did you pick us as opposed to the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post or anyone else, or even, you know, places like the National Review, which might be an arguable place to have this argument about the nature of the Trump administration with a contribution from inside it. Well, the question wasn't asked.
It was not asked.
Intriguing.
It was not asked.
Mm-hmm. It was not asked, and still being asked, of course, by outsiders. We won't get an answer, because we won't get any answers from inside the Times. This is a very clamped down house or shop at the moment. The New York Times is being very, very careful with this secret, as of course they rightly should be. They've promised a contributor anonymity. They don't often do that. The op-ed pages have only done it about four times, and we're saying about four because no one could be quite sure as we go back in the shrouded mists of history. But it's only happened when people's lives are at risk or for other very good reasons. And this was arguably one of those times when you do it. But they're going to come under an awful lot of pressure, of course, already have, from the chief executive, from the Prime Minister himself. Prime Minister, what country am I in?
I don't know. You're in France.
It makes a difference when you come to Europe. No, the President has said that this is a matter of national security, and the Times should give up the name of the person, but of course they won't.
They won't. And as we come up to more elections, and as people suddenly wake up to the fact that they've given over pretty much not only all of their information, privacy, and ability to think, but their minds to their screens, you know, it's you're talking to a you're talking into this really weird sort of encrusted, deadened, I don't even know what to call it. Because no one, from an insider standpoint, going to my question, why didn't it go to the Washington Post? As it happens, the Washington Post is running ring just in terms of, I don't want to say legitimacy, that's the wrong word, but in terms of their coverage of this administration, it's widely thought that Marty Baron and his crew are doing just a really crack job.
They do a terrific job, yeah. The New York Times is not doing a bad job. Come on.
No, it's not doing
I mean, I know I'm a little biased, but it's my hometown newspaper.
Right,
the almost official journal record. But they're doing a very creditable reporting job, and they've got some very, very good sources. But yes, I know what you mean, and it's still, you know, it's still debatable which of the two out of those who major
I think the Wall Street Journal is smarter.
The Wall Street Journal is specialist, non-specialist, general, nationally rated newspapers. Which of those two you would use to use as a megaphone for this very considerable piece of opinionated journalism? I still don't think it's. It's an open question still. Why did the person choose the New York Times? Don't have an answer.
I sit here as a bystander, and the thing that I like about this whole thing is that the Washington Post, they have reinstilled journalism to the forefront, and now the New York Times. This goes back to Watergate days when there was the big. When the New York Times sat on a lot of stuff and they were afraid to go against the president, and the Post was not afraid to go against the president, and went to the Supreme Court, and once the Supreme Court sided with the Post, the Times and everybody else chimed in.
On revealing the Nixon tapes.
Yeah. I just think that this is good. We need more journalism, whether you like the journalism or not. We need more reporting.
Yeah, but what we need, and this is my next thing, is... I was going to ask David this, because the Wall Street Journal, the reason that the Wall Street Journal is a really good idea is because at this point, people have become so partisan about the, what I wanted to jump to with the screen deadening is people really only want to hear what they want to hear. And unfortunately, you've got a group that... holds one gospel and a group that holds another. And I don't know what you do as you are trying to filter or be informed if you aren't being offered both sides so that you can choose. I mean, that's just my problem.
Well, this goes to the perpetual question of you know, how can we rely upon objectivity anymore in the field of journalism? I stick to the old belief that you can proclaim, you can proclaim objectivity, and you can work your damnedest to maintain it and practice it, which I think the New York Times does try to. Though it's clear in everyone's in the subjective opinion of people when they're surveyed, they do identify the New York Times as a liberal newspaper, almost not overwhelmingly, but substantially. And in this case, all you can do as a journalist is keep trying to do the best you can. And in the end, you don't have any say over how you're regarded. And whether you're placed in the bubble of one side or viewed askance in a hostile way by the opposing bubble.
Right, and that always makes me jump to that makes me typically jump to your country of birth, because. I don't know if you saw the whole timeline with the with the Salisbury poisoning that's recently come out, but
the Russians, who are now indicted by British authorities, Russian agents indeed, for poisoning the former KGB spy who who sought refuge in Britain.
With the level of
it's
detail.
It's an interesting timeline. What point are you making about it?
The interesting detail of the Nina Ricci perfume, for example. And the reason that I am making that is because even though we had this and we had that, and then we had the unfortunate, I'm forgetting his name, he is all right, but his partner, Don, who he gave the perfume bottle that he found in a dumpster to.
Uninvolved civilians, as it were.
And
yes.
Then we should sort of ask the questions, like if you're going to do a plan, you know, probably should tell your hoods where to or where not to put the poison. But that's all right. The fact is that all of this was known, and much of it was known, I would say, by last May. And, you know, it's what doesn't come out and what isn't spoken about that people who are actually there on site, so to speak, know. And that's the real frustrating thing about objectivity, because basically, I don't know how many people realize that they are being fed an incomplete, whatever the topic, it's an incomplete, you know, it's just the bits to sort of keep you, you know, reasonably apprised.
Sure, but you can't, I mean, in the defense of journalists, you can't tell the whole story every time you add a new piece to it. It's perpetually important. I mean, you and I have often agreed on this, that we must strive to provide the most context that we can conceivably do or reasonably do on a given occasion when
right.
you've got some news to report. Context is as important as the new piece that you're doing. But then you can't give the entire context
not the
every
whole
time.
Oh, absolutely. I know. I completely agree with that. I'm just saying that what seems to be missing along with objectivity is the, you know, by the way, let's just say that, by the way, the further bulletins as the situation warrants. And people are just very discreet, ETE, in their thinking and their consumption. So they're like little tabs of acid, little tabs of information that, while they are connected from a journalistic standpoint, from the person who's working on it, we just have become, in our consumption, it's like every day is a brand new day. It's like, yep, clean slate. Start again.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And that's the bit that I'm talking about, because it's very difficult for people who are, intentionally distracted. You cannot have screens and different apps and different everything's going without being distracted. I'm sorry. And, it's just the way that whole thing works. So to then say, oh, right, by the way, you're supposed to, you know, I don't know if you remember those old sing-alongs, but follow the bouncing ball. Ding-a-ding. You cannot ask people to do that anymore. And that leaves a tremendous...
Yeah, I think the best you can do is offer some degree of coloring in of the background every time that you are presenting a new piece of foreground. That's the essence of doing a well-rounded piece that advances a story. In this case, it was, the op-ed from the senior Trump administration official, that was a case where you simply drop this substantial rock in the pool and then let the ripples go. Everybody who's involved in that story involved in consuming it too, as a reader, it knows exactly what the importance of this is. It doesn't have to be dressed up with anything else. It doesn't have to have added context. That will happen anyway. So there are times when you just present something which is discreet with a double E and see what happens to it. There are other times when you want to produce a very different kind of entity, and much of that has been going on, to journalists' credit, in Washington at the moment, writing from Washington and other standpoints too. The French have been doing a lot of it. They've done a lot of contextual placing of this story. It's often done in the French media from a very partisan point of view. People are very ready in the French media to take sides, but that's nothing new for someone who's coming from the States these days, I have just done.
That's very true. And you know, the biggest beneficiary of all in this?
David
Remnick.
Of the New Yorker.
Of the New Yorker. Well, because while The Economist is still hosting, though, and again, in my beady little mind, well, maybe that's why. The Economist is having their Ideas Festival, and they have not disinvited the...
Whereas The New Yorker has disinvited Mr. Steve Bannon on probably censorious grounds, I would say. There's no getting away from it. I mean, if you disinvite him because of all the fuss it would cause on your side, your own side, as it were, then you're not really holding to that to great journalistic principle of objectivity, are you?
No, but he can be very thankful that that got completely drowned out.
Well, yes, there's something else to talk about and argue about, sure. But there's almost every day something new to
something
take sides about. Yeah.
And my point is, yes, what a distraction, people. You know, that's where I bow out.
I would imagine David is very grateful for it.
Yeah. And Marshall, did you want to say one more thing other than?
No, I just think that liberals and progressives make really stupid decisions when they quelch and shut off input from recognized, and I'm going to say,
doesn't matter if you're hateful. You can even say
so whether you like it or not, they're recognized, and they shouldn't be shut off. Ann Coulter's one of them. Bannon's another one. These people are shut off. I mean, Bill Maher, because of all this, was shut off from going to a place. You just can't do this.
The idea that it is being done, and then you get into these
deep weeds, very very messy weeds. You know, especially when it comes to if you're a social media platform and you ban Alex Jones and InfoWars from their crazy. Conspiracy theorist rightists, it's a difficult decision to make.
It all goes down even to this. I mean, on college campuses, people now protest Halloween costumes. These are Halloween costumes, and I'm sorry if you find them offensive. Just tell
Stay
the person
home.
To go away.
Yeah, really.
You know, there comes a point where when somebody wears a Halloween costume for Halloween, and you want it banned on campus. The problem is we're growing up and we're teaching people to be just very restrictive in their thought processes, not opening up their thought processes.
And trying to be, show you, these are quotes.
When I say I don't mean the colleges, I mean society now in general.
Yeah, but the point is when you're trying to give some sense of global and tolerance, it doesn't help by, you know, pouncing around and saying, oh, well, this is bad and you can't be this and don't listen to that and this person can't come. I mean, it's just so stunning to watch, mostly because it was I wasn't raised that way. David, you weren't raised that way. Then Marshall, I mean, we were challenged, and I'm not saying we were challenged to try to understand the other person's point of view. It didn't mean you to agree.
Sure.
With it.
And I think there's we still have the simple notion to grab hold of, like not going out on Halloween night if you don't want to be offended. There is also a TV channel selector that you can change the channel. And that remains true, no matter how sensitive and super sensitive in some ways people can get as censorious decision makers.
Yeah, and we also should, how much more time do we have?
We have about 2.5 minutes.
Okay, so I want to just totally change the subject just because I saw this, and this is something that's probably not, but there's, don't know if you've noticed that a couple of flights that have been arriving, people have been sick on.
Sure.
And I just noticed out of the corner of my eye that...
I've just been on a flight, and I was super sensitive to the idea of catching some bug. One flies in a metal cylinder with reprocessed air, and of course, it's always a troublesome thought.
Right, and then there's, in your favorite continent, there's an Ebola outbreak that's not entirely contained, but it's moving to different cities, and it's just... You know, they're a little
in
bit...
West Africa, yes. Right. It's West and Central Africa, yes. Uh-huh.
And it's near enough to you guys. You know, it's not that... It's, but a it's a question of people need to engage their brains differently than I think they are currently being used. And that's just where I want to leave
well,
it.
Well, these sicknesses were reported. What's your problem?
No. I'm not saying they're unreported. I'm saying that people don't really connect. They're not.
Oh, sure. Uh-huh.
We got a failure of dot connection. And I'm not just saying, you know, it's like, oh, here's a flower. It's just, you know, an effort, a better effort needs to be made in that.
There are always patterns to discover. We just don't make patterns up because we are hardwired that way to look for patterns. I mean, sometimes there genuinely are patterns, and it has to do with epidemiology, and it's a matter for serious analysis. You're right.
And
And on that note, we can say we have to conclude the show. And just,
I still want to know how the horses are.
The horses in this part of France are beautiful. They're white and they're glorious to see. How's that for a quick report?
With that being said, David, thank you for your comments again today.
Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk. It's a great quick report, the Media Beat.
Thank you.